This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Last week, an elected constituent assembly tasked with drafting a new constitution for Nepal completed its task. With an overwhelming majority, the assembly passed into law a new system of governance that firmly establishes Nepal as a secular federal republic. It's been a long time in the making, and judging by the news of continued political violence, a story that has yet to end. But to get a better sense of the Himalayan nation's constitutional struggle, I spoke to Ramesh Parajuli from the academic NGO Martin Chowdhury. I asked him why this constitution is seen as historic.
We have been talking about making a constitution written by elected representatives of Nepal since 1950s. So all these years we have, you know, produced constitution, but it's not been written literally by the elected representatives. It's been handed over to us by, you know, either kings or somebody else. So in that sense, it's historic, and it also gives permanence to all sort of transitional measures or transitional provisions that we had started off since 2006 movement.
One of the things that perhaps Malaysians will remember is, of course, that Nepal used to be a constitutional monarchy, or it used to be run by a king. And you, in fact, had this panchayat system. Could you explain what's come before? I mean, so that we can understand exactly how different the new system is.
If you want to go a little bit further, then we had from 1846 to 1951, we had a system called the Rana system, which was nothing but a hereditary prime ministership. We had a monarchy, but it was ruled by a family called the Ranas for 104 years. In 1950, we had a political revolution, 1950 and 51. Then after, we had a multi-party democracy for 10 years. In the 1960s, then again the Saha, which the 1950 revolution kind of put back into the throne, took over and disbanded the elected parliament and started ruling absolutely. For the next 30 years, he, King Mahendra, and his son, King Birendra, ruled Nepal absolutely. There was only one party, or they called it no party, but there was one party called the Panchayat. There was no room for dissent. There was political parties were banned. Civil liberties were curtailed. In 1990, we have had a revolution. We call it Jan Andolan the first. Then the banned political parties and the king, the monarchy, reached a compromise, reinstated a multi-party system and constitutional monarchy. So the king agreed to be a constitutional monarch. You know, you can compare it to the England situation where the king, the queen there doesn't have any role. But the king, Birendra, died in a royal massacre in 2001, and his brother became the king, King Gyanendra. And he again did what his father did in 2004, particularly in 2005, completely took over and started ruling by himself. At that time, Nepal also had a kind of civil war going on since 1996, waged by a political party called Communist Party of Nepal, the Maoist. So the Maoist party was on, and in the meantime, the palace or the king took over and started ruling by himself, sidelining all the political parties, mainstream political parties. In 2005-06, then again, these political parties and the Maoist also, you know, reached a truce. And the Maoist also gave up their violent conflict. So these two factions then aligned and waged peaceful movement against the king's direct rule. And the king then was forced to give up what he has snatched from the public. So later on, in 2 years, then the country then decided to go for a republic and kind of abolished the monarchy totally and became a federal democratic republic in 2008.
So then you move into a situation where there are these constituent assemblies that are made up of parties that are brought to that position through an election, and they were supposed to cobble together a constitution. I believe that the first constituent assembly failed, but this one has succeeded. And the question is, why did this one succeed when the previous one failed?
The previous one was also about to succeed, but then the Maoist party was the first party, and it also had some sort of arrogance. Towards the end, the party was about to split. in the name of constitution itself. So they were agreed. They had already signed an agreement with the political parties, but then they later withdrew, the Maoist particularly, because they fear that if that they went on with the constitution, then their party would disband, and then the current party would lose much of its cadres and leaders, and would be relegated to a small minority within the party itself. So the fearing that they decided to disband the constituent assembly rather than to, you know, be in the weaker position and promulgate a constitution. And the other parties were also happy also because they were not in a very big majority. But later on, the election happened, and towards the end of first election, there was a much more polarization along ethnic lines as well. And people have, particularly these parliamentary parties like Nepali Congress and UML, were against the ethnic federal idea that the Maoist had kind of thrown out. So there was this new configuration that was happening, and then people voted Nepali Congress and UML and sent them to CA, Constituent Assembly, as a bigger parties. And due also to the split within the Maoists were relegated to the third position. So their idea of ethnic federalism or the agenda also became weaker. And this time around, after the earthquake, there was a sense of unity among the parties also. And they thought that they could pass the constitution given the, you know, somber time period that we have seen after the post-earthquake.
That was Ramesh Parajuli of the academic NGO Martin Chowdhury in Kathmandu. When the new constitution was promulgated last week, a third of the country was under curfew. Just yesterday, the government of Nepal recalled the army to the barracks to ease tensions, which have been centered on the dissatisfaction of two of the country's large but historically marginalized ethnic groups, the biggest being the Madheshis. Added to this are regional dynamics involving Nepal's giant neighbor, India. Delhi has called on Kathmandu to respond to the demands of the disgruntled parties whose territory it shares a 1,700-kilometer border with. Whether accommodation will be reached is uncertain at this point in time. I'm Sharad Kutan, reporting for BFM.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.